You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Well, you fellas may not remember this, but in the before times, Columbus Crew were not very good. And then, in the pandemic times, they won a cup. And now they're not very good anymore. What should we draw from all of this? Probably nothing. But we're grasping at threads here, trying to explain the sudden collapse of the MLS Cup champions of Columbus Crew. Six losses in a row, and we have the panel assembled via Zoom to try to make sense in a senseless world. We got Ori here, we got Alex, we got Sam, we got Bart. We have great minds around the room. I'm Brian. I'll try to contribute something along the way. It's another Massive Report podcast after another loss. In fact, we haven't spoken to you since two more losses. I don't know how much time we want to spend on Red Bulls. That seems like that was about a year ago at this point. I feel like we can sort of shove that off to the side. We'll see what you guys think. But first, before we do that, we want to thank our old friends, and we'll be back to see them soon. Saucy Brew Works, Ori.
Yeah, of course. Got to thank Saucy Brew Works. It is the best bar in Columbus. It's also the best place to be in the world. So make sure to go to Saucy Brew Works, because if your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? Go there to watch some soccer. I'm sure they're going to be able to show some football. College football's coming back. Buckeye football, 443 West 3rd Avenue. Best pizza, beer, and just all-around good times in Columbus. Go to Saucy Brew Works.
All right, let's go around the room, and I want everyone to give me your percentage. Hopefully nobody has dug into this, because, of course, analytics will tell you by the moment the chances of anything happening. But just let's go around the room, and you each give a percentage that you will ascribe to the Columbus Crew at this moment right now, looking forward to decision day on November 7th. Are we a playoff team or not? Give us the percentage, Bart.
I am going to say 99%, maybe 96% playoff
team. That we are a playoff team.
I do. I think not just because I'm a shameless homer, but because there is time. Crew only with, again, 21 games played. You've got 13 games left in this season. They are right now 3 points outside of it. It is very crowded there for those bottom couple spots, with Montreal, with DC. Obviously Atlanta's in there, and you've let New York in. You need to take care of business, but this team is, there's too much talent for them to be this bad this long.
All right, let's go to the other end of the spectrum, I'm sure. Alex, give me your percentage that the Crew make the playoffs.
I don't know about that. I think I'm going to surprise some people and say 75%.
Wow.
75% chance we make it. I think that has a lot to do with the fact that MLS as a league is kind of stupid and lets way too many teams into the playoffs.
Okay.
There are bad teams that make it into the playoffs all the time. I don't think we're like a great team. We're an amazing team on paper. We're just not really playing that well. I think we'll get in. I think it's going to be close, and I'm not sure we're going to have like a super long playoff run, but I think we'll get in 75%.
75%. You know, if I would have applied analytics to your Twitter feed, I would have pegged that number a whole hell of a lot lower.
Listen,
so good. I'm feeling better now.
The combination of our losses and Caleb Porter talking incessantly about how he would change nothing is just destroying my brain and bringing me into dark, dark places, Brian. You should have muted my Twitter account long ago, to be perfectly honest.
No,
for all listeners, unfollow me.
Please. I mean, how can I mute you now? We're playing Cincinnati on Friday. We'll get to that. Ori, give me a percentage.
I'm saying around 90-95%. I'd still think in that range. I think, again,
so much optimism,
because you look at the current situation in the table, and I think you have to say that the chances are still pretty good. I mean, remember, this is a team that was able to have a 6-match unbeaten streak. You know, right before the 6-game losing streak, they had only lost, 4 games the whole season, which is still pretty good without having your best team on the field probably one time the entire season. They haven't been able to field their top 11 at any one point in 2021 with all the injuries. So while the losing is happening, I would say that Columbus still has that opportunity to pick it back up because, like Bart mentioned, it's 13 games. It's still a lot of time to get back in the playoff mix. All they really need is to get a win or two here and there, and then they're back into the top seven. The only thing that makes me hesitant is the likes of Atlanta, Miami, and the Red Bulls continuing their upward trajectory. Atlanta's won four straight. Miami enters this short all-star break very hot. I think they've won three straight. And again, Miami has two games in hand on the Crew, like the Red Bulls. So we'll see how the Red Bulls and Miami do in those two games in hand. And that will give us a better sense of how packed it's going to be between probably place six and place 11, because that those are going to be like five or six teams fighting for about two or three playoff spots in the East. The Crew is among them, and I'd still put them as a favorite in that group of six to make the playoffs.
Well, Sam?
How am I the pessimist in this bunch?
That's not how I figured this would go.
Okay. So I actually was thinking it was like somewhere in like, I was going to be like, yeah, 51%. But I'm hearing some good things. So I'll say 60%. I think there's an above 50% chance because of what Ori mentioned about it being a pretty compact, like the difference between a playoff spot and a not playoff spot is not very many points. And a lot of teams with the compressed schedule are going to falter. Hopefully we've done all our faltering and we're turning it around. So I'll go to 60%. They make the playoffs.
All right. Well, I'm going to be the black cloud of this outfit. The other night, walking into the game, I told my wife, I go, we're not going to win tonight, just so you know. And then we're walking out. I'm like, I told you. And she's like, you were such a drag. I go, I'm sorry. I call him the way I see him. You know, you knew that when you married me, that I'm a drag. I'm going to be the low man here. I'm going to put it at 50%, especially when you talk about the likes of inner Miami all of a sudden playing well. I swear to God, 3 weeks ago, we were laughing at them. I mean, that game against, I believe it was New England, where they just stood around and watched New England play. How is it possible that all of a sudden they have four? So I think I agree with Alex. You've always said that this league makes not a lick of sense most of the time. And so it's really hard to peg that. But Ori, if you would, because you're the numbers guy, and we'll revisit this here maybe at the end, if you could, you know, plug something into your internet machine and give us the actual number, the odds of us making the playoffs right now. Because I'll bet they're lower than 50% when you do the math.
I'm not sure if I know a resource that would give me that percentage right now.
You can figure it out, because I know they do it in baseball. You can look at the standings and see, well, this team has a 6% chance of getting in.
I would still guess mathematically, based on the Crew's roster and based on their schedule, that they probably still have above a 75% chance of making the playoffs. I mean, you look at their remaining 13 games, and I'm just going to see if I do a quick skim here, how many bad teams they're playing. And if we're being realistic here, they're not playing many bad teams. They're not playing anyone in the West anymore. Cincinnati is their one game against Cincinnati this Friday is probably the matchup that they match up best in, because after that, they have their road trip to Florida. They got to play the Red Bulls again, New England, Montreal, got to play Nashville, got to play Orlando again at home. Chicago is okay now. They're still not great, but they're okay. DC is a good squad. So honestly, they have a tough game every single week now. It will be a grind for the season. Vito Warmhorse said it himself. These last 13 games are like 13 finals, and he thinks they can win every one of them. Don't know about that. It's very hard to win 13 straight in any sport in any league, but all of these games are going to feel like six pointers because of the fact that you have this losing streak. They need to get their momentum back, but also got to make sure you get in the top seven. I think now the question is not whether or not Columbus will finish in the top three or four. They're not going to finish in the top three or four. Just based off the numbers, they would need a crazy good run, and they would need Orlando and Philly to totally drop off. If they make the playoffs, they would probably be in the sixth or seventh seed, which means they are likely not going to host a playoff game if they make the playoffs.
Yeah. That's sad, because I like our new place, but it is what it is. I suppose, you could say, well, it's too bad we don't play Toronto again, but I guess at this point you're kind of behind the eight ball. So in a way, it's good that you're playing teams that are ahead of you, so you can take them down a peg as you play them. If you're playing Toronto, how much does that really help you? And maybe they tie you or something. I don't know. Anyway, we have Cincinnati coming up on Friday. We'll talk about that in a few moments, because you take the playoff equation. I look at this game entirely as a separate entity at this point. We have to not only win, but we have to embarrass them, I think, or people are really going to start to panic. I know Alex will. We'll get to that here a little bit later. Do we need to spend any time in the Red Bulls game? It was so dull.
No, it was not a good game.
And I think that's kind of part of the problem here, is that it's not their responsibility to their responsibility is to get results, you know, however they see fit to get them. I found it more interesting on taking on Seattle on Saturday that Seattle didn't seem particularly engaged in this game at all until they fell behind. Otherwise, they were like, yeah, it's hot out. I didn't, Lori, did you see a lot of effort from them? I really was not impressed at all with
second
them
half,
until the end.
Second half more. And that's something they mentioned on the broadcast. And that's something we were talking about 8 months ago before MLS Cup. Seattle's a second half team. I recall, you know, at halftime when the Crew was up 2-0, you know, me and Pat and Patrick were there in the press box outside of historic Crew Stadium. And we're like, 2-0 is not a safe lead for any team against the Seattle Sounders, even at halftime, even in the 60th minute, even in the 70th minute. They came back against Minnesota to win the Western Conference. And this season, they scored the bulk of their goals in the second half. And once the second half started, you started to see a little bit quicker transitions in attack. They were able to get by the defense a little bit more. But obviously, they were able to get that one moment in the 88th minute to equalize. And then after that, they just were able to get the ball back, 40 seconds after scoring the goal, and then just had a nice quick attack. Or unable to get the second, you know, a minute later. So the second half is certainly a place where the Seattle Sounders succeed. You don't expect it to be two goals in a minute in the 88th and the 89th minute. That's just a gut-wrenching way to lose for the Seattle Sounders. We should mention, though, from the Red Bulls game, obviously the biggest moment there was Jossie Zardes getting injured. Crew just can't catch a break in that regard. Now their top strikers hurt for 2 to 4 weeks. But at the very least, Bradley Wright Phillips gets off the mark against the Sounders. That was important for him. And hopefully he can potentially carry that momentum for the Crew with some goal scoring while Zardes is injured.
Well, I do think that if you're looking to pull a positive from this, Bart, I felt like we played better. You know, I felt like we had a plan and we executed the plan to a certain extent, but still just the lack of chances. You know, Seattle's goalie didn't have to make a save until the 70 some odd minute, you know. So while I was pleased to see more effort and more organization, certainly defensively against a really good team, just still lack flair attacking wise, right, Bart?
Yeah, it's been rough. And you know, we got the chance to see Miguel Berry, you know, run out there at top, getting, I think, his first start outside of the Cincinnati game. Well, he came on, and no, it was the sub for the Cincy game. So, yeah, first start and
second,
and,
actually. He started after the Cincy game.
Oh, yeah. There we go. Regardless, not a particularly, obviously, memorable performance on his part. But, yeah, they just – it. You know, the way you were describing – Crew or Seattle earlier there, or is just kind of, you know, in this past game is just not kind of going through the motion until they lost the lead. That's what I feel like Crew has been playing with for a while. And then it was nice. And you finally see them get that lead, but there's just this sense of dread. Like you knew that this was coming, that this team can't close other teams out, or when they, you know, face this pressure, you obviously know Seattle is going to come and they're going to throw everything at you. And they're going to throw that talent that they have at you, and that they just, you know, knowing that either, you know, just weren't ready and couldn't execute, or again, you know, just Seattle's got too much quality. I don't think that's the case. I just don't think, even with a team that is, you know, exceptional like Seattle, that you shouldn't be able to close that game out if you're Columbus. And that's the problem.
Alex, were you in Nordic for this one?
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Was there that feeling of dread and ominousness?
Yeah.
As we came down the stretch before they scored?
I remember turning to somebody behind me in like the 60th minute and being like, oh, it still says zero shots on goal under Columbus at the top of the screen. Like, that's not great. This team does not look good. I mean, I thought that the defense did better until they didn't. But offensively, I mean, we created nothing for two thirds of that game. You know, we had that one opportunity and, you know, it went well for us, but for large stretches of time, there was no real attacking opportunities, right? I mean, it's not like we were getting good chances and just failing to convert. Like, we weren't getting any chances at all. We weren't even getting half chances a lot of the time. Like, the offensive highlights in the first half are like people getting to the corner flag and like clipping a ball in and just having it be like headed out with no chance of anything happening, right? I just did not have a good feeling about it. And like, I don't know. The body language of the team was not great either. I mean, they kept like going to Nordeca and like doing like the hand motion, like make more noise and stuff like that. And, you know, they just looked a little bit agitated. And the whole thing was just like very, very concerning to me, even beyond the scoreline. And so then when Seattle equalized, I again turned to somebody behind me and said, we're going to lose this game. You just had a feeling like they're going to lose. I did not think that it would be in under a minute. But it was one of those things where it's like, you know, what are you going to do? Right. It's the sixth straight. I wasn't shocked by it. I mean, I was kind of like you, I went in thinking that we probably weren't going to win. But it was like the way that we lost. And then those post-match comments that really rubbed me the wrong way. Yeah, I was not shocked by it, unfortunately.
Ori, there were two things, and you mentioned one of them, or somebody did in the coverage of MassReport.com, that Darlington Nagbe had his usual accuracy, but he lacked in a statistic that I got to be honest with you, I'd never heard, key passes, which makes sense as to what it is, but I never really thought of it that way. So, in other words, for the balance of the game, his passes had no effect on an attacking chance, if I understand it correctly.
Yeah, that's kind of what the key pass stat tries to kind of quantify, is passes that really lead towards positive play. And if you look at a pass chart for Darlington Nagbe and for a lot of the Crew players in recent games, a lot of the passes are backwards and a lot of the passes are sideways. And at halftime on national television, Caleb Porter was discussing how he wants his team to, you know, take the game a little more, pass vertically, which I think is very, very important because you want to play positively. And then as they lose the game and they're up 1-0, as they give up those two goals at the press conference, Bradley Wright Phillips mentioned, you know, we're up 1-0, got to keep on playing, you know, going forward, trying to win the game. It was as if the Crew was playing, waiting for the final whistle to get the win rather than go after the game to try and get the win. And I think that's a mentality that a lot of teams in world soccer lack a lot of the time. You're up 1-0 or and after you're up 1-0, sometimes you just want to hold back and just make sure that you win the game 1-0 and then just walk away with the 3 points rather than playing positively from minute 1 to minute 90 and attacking the game, which is what you see from the likes of Leeds United as a great example in the Premier League. They just run at you and they don't care if they give up 5 goals. Exactly. They're just going to keep attacking.
I love watching them. They're so much fun because they do not give a crap.
Right. But the thing is that the counter argument to playing positively all game, every game, is how's that going to affect fatigue? How's that going to affect injuries? If you're attacking all game long for what, 10 months out of the year.
How many subs do we get?
5.
And Seattle they unloaded their bench. And we didn't, did we? We didn't use all of our subs.
That's the thing. I think
I know Caleb doesn't like to use subs. It was 88 degrees. We should have used all of our subs to get legs out there. And I totally agree with you. I think, you know, Seattle finally showed after they fell behind a willingness to attack, which would have left them exposed. It's just basic stuff. And we just kind of let them, you know, piece together with their, I mean, obviously Will Bruin pick it up as a sub, the winning goal the other night. You know, I mean, we know they have a deep bench and they're going to use it. And they did. And, you know, just having fresh legs on the field, you know, I looked at Kevin Molino warming up the whole game. He doesn't go in until the 90th minute. Like, what a waste. Mm-hmm. This is a good player. I couldn't understand that at all. He should have been on the field. Am I wrong there? You know, I haven't seen him train.
Is he a good player? I don't know.
In the 70th minute of an 88-degree game where you need fresh legs, I think he's an asset that you can deploy.
I think, you know, when you go down,
it's an asset. It's an asset that doesn't play defense.
Yeah.
So is it an asset? It's an asset that gets winded.
Look at the lone goal scored by New York.
That gets winded pretty quickly. I mean, that's the worry part.
Point taken. But I think in the larger sense, mm-hmm. what I'm saying is, you know, on such a hot night, use your subs.
Yeah. Utilize the five subs.
Maybe, you know, I'm thinking of Molino in terms of what we knew him as a Minnesota player. Obviously, he hasn't measured up to that. But I'm like, to your point, I want to keep attacking. That's what I want to do. And I feel like he's going to help us do that.
100%. And the way that you get teams out of these kind of losing mentalities is you tell them you're playing your game. Like, as soon as we started to bunker down, like, that's when we lost the game, because we took ourselves out of that mindset and we started playing the old Berhalter ball. I can't even there were multiple times when Greg was the coach where we would control the game the entire time until the last 20 minutes of a game, and he would tell everybody to sit deep and bunker down, and we would give up that late equalizer every time.
It happened it was like you expected it, and that's sort of how I felt the other night. It's like, oh god, I just
they were clearly told, like, okay, possess the ball, like, stop going forward. But I would have loved the Molino sub, because I would have been like, go get a second goal, like, kill these guys, go out there and bury these guys. But they didn't do that. They sat deep. They tried to defend. I don't think they have a whole lot of confidence in each other at this point, which is pretty concerning to me. Like, the body language that we've seen in the last couple games between, like, Mensa and Room and Vito is not great. I mean, just in general, defensively, like, I don't think that they feel like they are the wall that they were earlier on in the season. I think they miss Josh Williams like crazy.
He's their spiritual leader, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, Bart? He's our spiritual leader.
I think so. And that's the thing. And you know, you love Jonathan Mensa. He's such a terrific human being. But I need more from him right now as the captain of Columbus Crew. Because one of those things for coaches, you don't want to be the guy who gets your team up and motivated. Okay. You want to be the X's and O's, the adjustments, the game plan, but you want your locker room to be able to do that for themselves. And that starts with the man who's wearing the captain's armband. I'm not putting Caleb Porter off the hook for any of this, for the tactical missteps, for telling them. I'm in full agreement with Alex when it comes to, you know, the just terrible fever dreams of Greg Berhalter ball with some of this. But I do think because the body language has been real, and ultimately that's the captain. You need that person to kind of set that tone, to not when your center back looks defeated and he's on the ground and Seattle players are trying to, like, help him up after the goal because he's so defeated. That's rough. That's not a good look for your team. And that's not what you want to see from your captain. And, you know, he's better for it. And he's, you know, he's taking more accountability, albeit by tweets the next day, than I've seen for most people. But I want to see it on the field. I want him holding his teammates accountable and saying ultimately that this isn't acceptable, not just we're sorry.
Now, Alex, you've talked a lot about Caleb Porter before, in not too glowing terms as far as his personality. We've all heard things about how the players don't necessarily have a lot of love for him. You know, that's just stuff I'm hearing. This seems to be the kind of locker room that has to be taken over by a captain, because Caleb Porter is not going to inspire these guys when times are tough. I don't get that. He's not Pete Carroll, you know, the Seahawks coach, who's always like, ah, everything's cool, you know. He's not.
But he is. But that doesn't strike me as a positive.
Well, yeah, but what is he saying to them? We don't know, you know?
Yeah. I didn't even like it that he was saying what he was saying to the press. I mean, the fact that you have 20,000 people who spent a couple hours in 90-degree heat to watch the team give up two goals in under 2 minutes, and then you go into the press conference and you say you wouldn't change anything is insulting to every single fan who showed up for that game. Yeah. I was there at 3 o'clock to get the TIFO ready, and I was holding on to a nylon rope that was like slipping out of my hands and giving me rope burns on my hands. I'm trying to hold this stupid TIFO up to watch this team, you know, collapse at the end of this game. And I have to drive home and listen to you talk about how you wouldn't change anything. Like, that is not the attitude that I want to see from my coach. And that's not the attitude I want to see from my captain. Like, they need to go out and they need to say what we have put on display in these last six games is unacceptable. It's beneath you as fans. It's beneath us as the city of Columbus. And it's beneath us as the team, the Columbus Crew. And we're going to do better as defending champs. And yeah, we might not win the cup this year, but like, we're going to fight tooth and nail to win every single time we go out there. I'm not seeing that fight from these guys. I'm seeing like these lethargic performances where, you know, stuff starts to go south and you just get this feeling like they're going to blow it. They are going to blow it. And then they blow it. And, you know, I tweeted this out. They need a sports psychologist. Like, they're in their own heads too much. And, you know, I don't know if Caleb can fix it. I don't even know if Jonathan can fix it. Like, I think they need professional help and, you know, okay, something to get these guys out of it. No, I'm dead serious. Like, I think that they need to get a sports psychologist.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. I think it's at this point, it's really mostly in their head. And it's like, who was it? Etienne that had a great pass from Pedro that bounced off the post or bounced off the bar, and then they called him offside. And it's like, it's that psychological case of the yips or the twisties or whatever you want to call it, that things are not going their way. And they feel like right now that anything they do is no, like there is no solution, because one, obviously they're missing so many people, but also like, what, like, you're like, we're getting this close and nothing is going in. How, what are we doing? What else can we do and not be screwed by our single mistake?
Yeah. I think Vito said after the game that it's been a nightmare, I think was the phrase he used. Like, that's a scary thing to hear. Like, one of your starting center backs say, like, when they're saying that, like, you know, that Vito is staying up until 3 a.m, like having nightmares about that game. Right. You got to get those guys into a positive headspace. And, you know, I don't know if they need to do like a team retreat or like what they need to do in Italy. They will like literally stop going to press conferences and the team will stop giving interviews, and like, they'll take 2 weeks and they'll just like go into like a secluded area and just like train together without like outside contact. Like, I don't know what the US professional soccer, major league soccer equivalent of that is. Maybe they need to go to like Plain City for like a week or something. I don't know, but they need to do something, guys. I'm getting, like, this is crazy. Yeah,
you're talking about the Italy players going away, and I just picture in my mind that Michael Corleone hiding in Italy in the Godfather or something.
There's an
idyllic small town. You know, we don't necessarily like how it turned out, but you know, it was a nice town. Maybe that's what they need, a small town in Italy to hide out in for a few days.
Yeah, and I don't want to butcher the Italian word for this thing, but it's like a thing that teams do when they're like really down in the dumps, right? No more press conferences, no more interviews. Like, we're doing closed door training sessions. We're going completely dark basically until we get our heads right. And they will do that for like a couple weeks sometimes, but like, that's what happens when a team is like in the form that we're in. I don't think we do that in the US, but like, they need to do something. Cause
you know what the difference is though?
Crazy.
You know what the difference is though? Your interviews, your post game stuff, your post practice stuff, in Italy, where you have, you know, 30 reporters and they're all yelling at the coach and stuff like that. In Columbus, Ohio, or in MLS, if you get 5 people there and they're all like super nice, you're lucky.
Yeah,
that is true.
At crew post game and training,
during normal times, there would basically be a, you know, at minimum, at least three people there that are going to ask questions every time. And then obviously you have four or five most days, but it's between three and five people per training per post game that are asking questions to Caleb Porter and the players. And Pat and I are two of those people.
They just need to figure something out. Cause like the thing that really concerns me is like, I don't feel like I have confidence in the craziest thing I thought at the beginning of the season, like on paper with Porter, this team can beat anybody. And now the feeling that I have, like, if you ask me about the crew in August, is I'm not sure this team can beat anybody. Like, it's completely flipped. Like, I'm not sure what team we could face where I could be like, feel completely confident that we will get 3 points.
I know exactly what team. I have the salve for your wound, Alex. I got FC Cincinnati coming in.
Ooh.
Are we ready to segue to that? By the way, you mentioned it. The TIFA was amazing. I was hoping maybe that would lift us to victory. Thank you so much for all the efforts in Nordica. It was exciting to see. I like how they didn't do it all at once. Were there any technical snafus that we need to be aware of, or did everything work according to plan?
It worked pretty much according to plan. And shout out to the TIFO Sweat team and within Nordica for all their hard work. This was a project that took many, many months and took a lot of painting, a lot of sewing, a lot of coordination with the front office to try to figure out, you know, how TIFO would work in this new stadium. Took a team of 20 people on game day to kind of make sure that everything worked right. You know, one of the banners had like a little tangle in one of the nets or something like that. You really couldn't see from anywhere except Nordica, but just an amazing, amazing display and biggest that we've ever done as far as I'm aware. So went off without a hitch for the most part, and you know, can't wait to see what future displays TIFO Sweat will be working on. So, excited to keep working on it.
Quick turnaround on Friday. The TIFO game has to be on point because FC Cincinnati is coming to town. And here's a team that, while they're still sitting close to the bottom of the table, they reeled off four straight draws, Ori, before getting pounded by New England, which is, you know, I mean, New England.
That's what everyone.
Rough shot over everyone. So I don't know that we draw a whole lot from that. But what has Cincinnati been doing to besides park the bus?
They're back to being the king of the draws, it seems. I mean, let's look at Cincinnati this season since they've opened their new stadium. They still haven't won a game in their new stadium. They're the only one of the three teams that have opened a new stadium this season and yet to win a game. But, you know, you look at all the draws they've had since they drew Columbus 2-2. They had one insane game in Montreal where they lost 5-4 to Club de Foot, and then just a bunch of nil-nils and 1-1s smattered around the whole schedule. But you want to talk about a crazy statistic. I tweeted this out late Saturday night. Since July 1st, the Ohio MLS teams have combined for 2 wins, 10 draws, and 9 losses.
Ugh.
Crew has all the wins. Cincinnati has 7 of the 10 draws, and the crew has 6 of the 9 losses.
Ugh.
So the crew has actually lost more games than Cincinnati since July 1st, but has also won more games than Cincinnati, but Cincinnati has drawn more. So hell is indeed real for both of these clubs right now, which is going to make this Hell is Real derby on Friday incredibly, incredibly important, because Cincinnati hasn't won a game since late June. They desperately need a win if they want any shot of making any sort of challenge at the postseason, but it's unlikely they get there. And at the same time, Cincinnati, you know, the sparkling new stadium, they had big signings like Brenner and Acosta, and they're still not delivering the results. And obviously the crew desperately need the win. They got to beat their rivals at home. They're on a 6-game losing streak. They lose to Cincinnati at home, then fans are going to be even more ticked off than they already are now. So this Hell is Real is big, very important for both clubs, particularly for the Columbus Crew.
And Bart, I feel like the first time we played them this season, we didn't learn a whole lot because it was such a weird game, getting the 2-2 draw after the red cards. you know, I think we just wiped the slate clean as far as that goes and look at this as its own entity. Cincinnati, are they going to come up here, do you think, and try to win the game? Are they going to play it like a normal MLS road game, a normal Cincinnati game anywhere, and just try to get the point, get out of town?
I mean, if you'd asked me that question 3 weeks ago, I'm saying Cincinnati, you know, is bunkering, you know, just from the start and seeing if they can steal something. But with the way Columbus is playing right now, they might feel cocky enough to, you know, come up and say, hey, let's do the 4-4-2 ourselves on the road. I think this, though, is, if there is a game, one thing that I'm going to definitely give Caleb Porter kind of credit to, and you know, do the analogy, it's like John Cooper and Jim Tressel when it came to the Michigan game, you know, not treating it like a thing. And then, you know, Jim Tressel, first thing he does is says, there's some 300 some days till Michigan. Caleb Porter takes this game seriously, and the players feed off of that. Right. And so if they're I think this has got to be the slump buster. If you're Columbus, if you cannot turn things around against Cincinnati at home, you know, after everything that you've just gone through these last six games, if you are not able to put in a performance, if these players cannot be motivated to put some energy behind it and can't find a way to get 3 points, that is a serious problem. And I don't see that's when my playoff prediction drastically changes, because I don't see you're starting to see, like, you're running out of stops.
Yeah. The math changes drastically. Mm-hmm. If we, God forbid, lose this game. This is, to me, Alex, this is its own thing. This is the season in and of itself to me. And I know you're looking at it that way. And I know that you monitor the enemy's transmissions a lot. What sort of feel are you getting from them in social media after they've racked up all these draws and looking at us struggle? Are they starting to kind of feel it a little bit?
You know, it's not the feeling that I get from Cincinnati. I mean, I really feel like they don't want to take anything for granted. I mean, they understand that their team is historically terrible. They understand that they have the worst franchise in Major League Soccer history. They understand that. But I mean, we are also maybe at our lowest point in a few years, probably at our lowest point in a few years. We're not doing too well. This game's kind of a gamble, right? Cause you know, if they beat us, then they can, you know, they're going to have something to joke about for the next year or whatever. If we beat them, just think about this. You know, I want all Crew fans to get on board with this train of logic that I'm about to lay out. We should not celebrate this as a win. We should not pretend like we have turned the corner. We should say that you are so bad that our 6 losing streak, terrible injury plagued Crew roster could still beat you. And that, you know, you're never going to beat us, basically. You know, we're never going to be worse than this. You still can't win. So, you know, that's the attitude that I think that we should all carry with.
So what you're saying is if we beat them, the losing streak is still alive. It's still intact.
I think that it should. I think it should be 6 losses with an asterisk next to it. Like, it doesn't really count as a win because it was Cincy, right? You know, it shouldn't count as a win. Let's let him off the hook.
Tell that to Caleb Porter and see what happens.
You won 1 game out of 7, and the 1 game was FC Cincinnati. Okay, that's like, you know, hitting the ball into the lake on the first 6 holes on a golf course, and then you get to like that little test putt course at the end where it's just like nothing but green, and you put the ball like 6 inches away from the hole and you just like tap it in with like a putt golf.
It's
like
a gimme.
Putt club.
It's
a gimme. It doesn't count. It doesn't count, Brian. It doesn't count.
Oh, it does.
They need to get 2.
It does when I play golf. It does count.
There you go. There you go.
Ori, you name checked Acosta as a big signing, the little man from Argentina, all 5'3", 128. They have 4 goals, 4 assists from him in 17 matches. How much more were they expecting?
Probably a little bit more. I think the biggest thing is Brenner. You know, he was just the big signing striker from Brazil. He scored 5 goals this season. I think you would have thought that he would have more. I mean, the fact that among the top scorers in MLS this season, Ola Kamara is one of them. Nobody would have said that in April or March. If you predicted top scorers in Major League Soccer for this season before the season started, Brenner was probably somebody that came up because he was so prolific in Brazil. He's a big signing. Probably not the first name that comes to mind. You probably think of Rui Diaz, who is the current top scorer, Diego Rossi, Carlos Vela, Joseph Martinez. But Brenner was someone that people were talking about as maybe a striker that could help turn around Cincinnati, Acosta as well. No one was talking playoffs for this team, mind you, but I think they expected a little bit more from Acosta and Brenner. But at the same time, the defense has improved for this team. You know, they don't lose too many games by big scorelines. Fair enough, they've lost their last 2 games, 3-0 and 4-1, the last 2 times they've lost. But in between those 2 losses, 3-0s and a 1-1 draw. So defensively, they've improved because they. It seems that the strategy of sitting back and being able to not concede goals is working a lot better for them. But, you know, right now the road form has not been great for Cincinnati. You know, 1 goal in their last, 3 road games. It'll be interesting to see. But the problem is this league is so random that you never know what can happen. You know, the Crew come in, technically speaking, on worse form. Even though Cincinnati hasn't won since, you know, June 26th, Cincinnati's picked up 4 points in their last 5 games. Columbus has picked up 0 points in their last 6. Both teams really need to turn things around. I would still pin the Crew as the favorite, I think, because at home, I think tactically they had stuff for the most part going their way against Seattle. They were able to control the game. They just weren't doing enough in possession. I think in this game, knowing what happened against the Sounders, where they need to be after Friday, they're going to attack the game, I think, in the first half. It's against their rivals, their first game at home in their new stadium against their rivals. They're on this losing streak. They're going to go after the game. They've had time to rest. They're not playing 3 games in 7 days like everybody just did in Major League Soccer. So I think you'll see a fast-paced attacking team. And I'd like to see that, I think, more from the Columbus Crew, a little bit more risk-taking offensively, you know, trying to take some shots inside the box, getting some good crosses in, some good runs, some good interlinking play. And, you know, the first half that comes to mind that I think has been one of the more entertaining, better first halves from this team this season is when they played the Fire in the last game at Crew Stadium. They knew that game had stakes. They knew that game had to be entertaining because they had to send this place off. They know this is the most important game at home this season. It's against the rivals.
And they went.
Yeah, and they won 2-0.
They went for it. They went for it. Yeah. I mean, that seems like such a long time ago. And it wasn't really that long ago. It was 2 months.
Yeah,
and this is a completely different team. You're absolutely right. I mean, of all the matches we played this year, that was where I was by far most impressed by the effort and the tactics and the game plan and all of that stuff. My concern, I have 2 concerns. I don't know how much Lucas is going to play in this dumb All-Star game, which I've never been a fan
of. Probably not.
Hopefully none. Withdraw him after the skills competition. Just do it.
Yeah, I mean, he needs some time off. He didn't look right on Saturday, and we didn't really touch on it, but he was dispossessed a few times. He sort of dribbled himself into trouble and so forth, things that we're not used to seeing from him, and we need his legs to be fresh. I hope he doesn't play in that stupid game at all. I don't care about All-Star games.
He probably will, but it's a 28, 27-man roster. Bob Bradley will rotate plenty. They're just going to get guys as many minutes. While they want to win, they want to beat the League MX All-Stars. Not like they don't. They know that they don't want to. They want to make sure these guys don't leave injured.
Yeah.
Until Don Garber just, you know, passes him a slip of paper and it's just like Lucas plays the entire game. You got everything else. It's just guys getting subbed off after like 15 minutes.
Yeah, have Lucas and all the Seattle out guys there together the whole time.
Just gut it out.
Well, I know, Ori, it's too early to know as far as your weekly chat with the coach and so forth. Any chance at all that Jossi plays on Friday?
No. He's out 2 to 4 weeks. So
okay, I wasn't clear on how long he was
out. Yeah, the earliest Jossi will return would probably be late September, based off of the weekly format. Ugh. So the next play, I mean, now Luis Diaz seems to be okay. The only thing that will be interesting to see is it seems like he re-aggravated his shoulder on that penalty appeal there in stoppage time on Saturday when he came on. I thought he was a good addition, added a spark of speed offensively off of the bench, but we'll have to see how he's feeling. I think waiting to see on Josh Williams, waiting to see if Marlon Hairston is going to be back anytime soon. Now Perry Kitchen is added to the long-term injury list. He had a surgery on a herniated disc about a week ago. So that's the position.
That's never a great thing.
That is the position where the Crew has suffered the most in depth of central midfield. And it started in the second game of the season when Aiden Morris tore his ACL against Real Esteli.
Yeah.
And Artur gets injured long-term, has surgery. Perry Kitchen has surgery. Marlon Hairston has had longer injury spells. They have three players in central midfield: Nagby, Frazier, and Isaiah Parente. That's it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that...
Yeah,
go ahead. Go ahead, Bart.
I thought at first, because, you know, we mentioned the Jossie injury, that really Jossie Zardes, you know, getting that breakaway against New York and kicking it straight into the keeper and then getting injured encapsulated the season. But I really think it is the potential of re-aggravating a shoulder injury on an appeal for a penalty that encapsulates the Crew season right there, especially if Lucho misses any more time.
What really would have encapsulated it is if they would have given him the penalty and then we would have missed the penalty. That would have been like that.
Oh my goodness. Well, I gotta think that this is a winnable game. I think the world's like hell is going to open up in the middle of the field and swallow us all whole, Sam, if we don't win this game. I mean, it's just like that the
Dark Knight Rises.
Yes.
Right. I mean, it's not, even if it doesn't open up in the field and swallow it up, the Nordek might actually literally be lit on fire using whatever fabric is used for the TIFO. And it'll be turned into pitchforks and they will run on the field and chase down Caleb Porter, even though it's only partially his fault. So yeah, that's a very big possibility. And somebody, I hate using the term it's a must win, but come on. Reality is at this point, this is like the Michigan game. If OSU is just going to make it to a bowl game versus like, you know, a national championship. If you don't win the Michigan game, did you even do anything that season? No. So that's basically it, especially after the comeback and how much bad, I don't want to say bad blood, but I guess it is bad blood after Caleb shushed the FCC crowd. Bad blood with Cincinnati. And so I actually think it's going to be a pretty aggressive game. It should be pretty interesting. We don't need any more people hurt, but I wouldn't be surprised if we do get some.
Well, I think the key is to come out with the foot on the pedal. You've got to score first, probably got to score two goals first. You need to put this game out of question early, which is not something that we're good at all. And we need to be good at that on Friday. It's a shorter week. Guys are tired. Guys are bummed out. We got Lucas going to this dumb all-star game. So it's not ideal, but we need to come out just guns blazing. So I don't know how to accomplish that. Hopefully just playing these clowns will be enough. I don't know how many Cincinnati fans. Alex, you have a feel as to how many Cincinnati fans we're going to see on Friday?
I don't know. I don't have any good numbers.
So we saw more Seattle supporters than I expected. That's for sure. They whether they be local or they're taking that great Alaska Airlines nonstop from Seattle, which is tremendous.
Yeah. I was happy to see them come up, but if they were Cincy supporters, they would have left before both of those goals. So, you know, it was pretty, good for them for sticking it out.
Oh, so they weren't Cincinnati fans in disguise. I see.
No, they would have left.
I hadn't thought of that. Okay. Well, we have a few things that we need to tie up before we finish, but let's go ahead and make our hell is real call. Our score calls here, and we got to talk about a new player coming to town and any other little bits of business that pop up before we wrap things up. We'll start with you, Sam. What do you got for Hell is Real?
I'm going to go with a 2-1 Columbus win.
2-1. All right. So a tight, will we score late to win the game, or are we going to go up 2-0 and then
we're going to go up 2-0 and then have a mental lapse between 1 and 2
oh,
and then allow tremendous. A goal.
Kevin, I can't wait for another mental lapse. I'm looking forward to that. All right. Ori, what do you got?
I'm going to be way out of the box for this one and go crazy. Crew wins 4-3. I think it's going to be a ridiculous game. Both teams are so desperate to win. This is their chance, the last chance this year. They're playing each other. They're not playing again like they did in 2020, like they played every freaking week. I think it's going to be a hell-like game. It's just going to be wild and crazy. It's going to be MLS on Friday night at its finest. 4-3 Crew. What the hell? Might as well. A what the hell kind of pick for Hell is Real.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, we'll entertain that ESPN national television audience. The 6:30 kickoff. Alex, how do you see it?
I think it's going to be incredibly boring because I think both teams are still going to play like garbage. But I think the Crew will win 1-0.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. I have no idea where Ori thinks 7 goals are coming from for these two pathetic
Montreal
teams.
And Seattle and Cincy played a 9-goal thriller in this league. Anything is possible. It could be 1-0. It could be 6-7. We don't know.
I don't see it. I think that these are two bad teams that are going to play each other, and we are not as bad as Cincinnati by a slim but discernible margin. So I'm going to give the Crew the win. I will be taunting Cincy fans online saying, you guys are so bad that you can't even beat the worst Crew team ever. But, you know, it's still not going to be good. No one is going to leave that game saying we've solved it. It's better. There are still going to be people saying we won, but Caleb Porter should still get fired. That's going to be fun. I 1-0, Brian.
All right. Wow. Okay. Bart.
I was gonna refurbish or reuse my pick for, I think, New York Rebel last week, a 2-1 win where Crew Crew will go in front, then give up a late goal to Cincinnati, but then Crew pressing to try to score there in stoppage time and gets a FC Cincy own goal. And I think I'm going to stick with that. Yeah, we're going to go with that. 2-1 victory off the FC Cincy own goal.
I love that. Can I make my 1-0 win where neither team scores except for a Cincy own goal? I love that.
Could you imagine if the game ended with – if it was like – like
would own goal be back up to top of the story? Oh no, no!
Lucas has 6 goals. Lucas. Jossie has 4. Own goal has 3 right now.
There, yeah, tied
we
with
saw
Jossie.
2 of those against what? DC United.
DC United, mm-hmm. And then what was the third own goal? The Liam Fraser pass off of Farrell in the
opener.
Forget
New England game.
I want the own goal to come off Brenner so I can compliment him for his goal scoring prowess on Twitter afterward. That's all I want.
All right. Well, I don't know what to make of all that. I don't know why I feel this way beyond the fact that Cincinnati is not very good. They're coming into a hostile environment. I think people are going to be fired up for this game. They're going to try to park the bus. The Yop Stom way. They're going to play the Yop Stom way, and they're going to get Yop stopped. 4-1.
There we go.
They're going to be up 4-0 before they get anything. They're going to get a late, cheap goal, and they're going to be sort of excited about that. I just think that we're going to take out all of our frustrations on these poor guys, and they're not going to know what hit them. I don't know why I feel that way. I shouldn't feel that way. But I do. And I'm the guy who said I'm the pessimist of the bunch here at the jump of tonight's podcast. I'm saying no, enough is enough. And all of our frustrations are going to be taken out on these guys. 4-1.
If we win 4-1, I'm going to have to start like a GoFundMe for some Skyline gift cards or something for those poor people. They have been through so much.
Or what's the Bizarro World Skyline?
Gold
star. Let's get him some gold star. Why is, you know, has anyone here had gold star yet? I have not.
Oh, yeah. I've
maybe
had
it's it. Better. Maybe it's better. I don't know.
I think it may have been, but that might have just been like me being contrarian in high school. I haven't had it since.
Yeah, you're being all cool and punk rock, but no, I'm not going to eat Skyline. I eat Gold Star. That's what I eat. I don't know what you guys are eating. That's a whole other conversation. Okay, well, Gold Star must be making it somehow. So good for them. All right, we got our picks in. We have a new player coming, but he's not going to be here on Friday, is he, Ori?
He will not be. Steven Moreira is the player. Straight from France. Played for Toulouse in Ligue 1 in the past season. Has a lot of Ligue 1 experience, so he's been playing in one of the top leagues in the world. It's not the Farmers League. The best player in the world plays in Ligue 1 now. These are very competitive teams in France. And Steven Moreira is a big signing for this team. I think he can help as he's a right back primarily. He's played left back before in his career, but he's basically going to come in as sort of a right back to replace Harrison Afful as his time most likely comes to an end pretty soon in his career. Moreira being 27 years old, he's in the prime of his career, and he's got 9 years of professional league soccer under his belt. And he had international experience. He played with the French U16, 19, 20, and 21 teams. He played in the under-19 European Championships in 2013. So, and this is somebody that's, you know, played against some top players in Liga and Ligue 1 being a solid second division league in Europe. So I think this is a positive signing for the Crew. He'll take an international roster spot. He won't be there by Friday, but the hope is maybe he's on the roster and he should be ready for the Florida road trips to start September against Orlando and then Inter Miami. But a nice little signing here for the Columbus Crew that they could make with the transfer window closed in MLS because he's a free agent in Europe. So they were able to get him. I'm curious to see how he plays. And now there's 15 different countries represented on the Crew roster.
Well, the question always is when a player, especially if he's not in the top level in his country, albeit a country with great professional soccer, why was he out of contract? Why didn't he stay with his team? Why didn't anyone want him? Can you answer that? Do we know enough?
Yeah, I don't know enough of the details there to give you an honest answer. It's possible that Toulouse were looking, you know, elsewhere. Toulouse has been a team that's been in Liga for quite some time, but then they just got relegated two seasons ago during the season where they had to pause it for, you know, however many months because of COVID, and then they had to finish, so 19-20 season. But they made a good run in the Coupe de France last season. That sounded so American the way I said
just
that.
Sort of like their FA Cup.
Is yeah, that's their that FA is? Cup, exactly. So okay. And Toulouse made a decent run there. But, you know, this is a signing that, you know, you don't hear a lot of MLS teams signing guys that have all this experience playing, you know, in a top professional league in Europe. So,
yeah.
You know, the Crew, it's not like the Crew signed players that have played in the Bundesliga a lot or played in La Liga. This guy has a lot of years under his belt, and he's only 27 years old. He's got over 200 appearances in club soccer, which is phenomenal for a guy who's 27. A lot of experience in his prime. It's an exciting signing, I think.
I feel like the only person in this room who could have possibly seen this guy play was Alex.
I have not seen him play, but okay. The fact that he comes from a team called Toulouse makes me slightly concerned.
Is that what you want to rebrand FC Cincinnati? Right?
Oh, my
sure.
God.
That should be their sister city. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, that doesn't give me the warm fuzzies, Brian. But I just wanted to correct Ori. He said the best player in the world now plays in France. Federico Higuain is still in Miami, so I don't know how I feel about that comment there, Ori.
He'll be at PSG in no time, right?
There we go.
All right. Well, they can't afford it. What's the timetable? Does he have to pass some sort of quarantine or something?
Yeah. So right now his contract will be completed upon his receipt of what's called an international transfer certificate. He needs a P1 visa as well. Then he'll be in Columbus. I don't know if he has to do a quarantine. I would guess based on the strictness of French quarantine and COVID laws, he would probably need to quarantine before coming to the United States. And based on the Delta variant, who knows how much stricter the United States is handling international travel? I'm not sure, but he probably would have to quarantine, I would guess, and then he'll be with the team. I would expect him to be available for selection for the Orlando game on the 4th of September, potentially making a start. Yeah.
Ori, when will Giovinco be available?
Giovinco, the atomic ant. I don't know.
What's going on there? You guys were talking about this before we started recording. What? I've missed something.
No,
what's going on there?
No, we'd have no idea with Giovinco. There's been some reports on Twitter that apparently the Crew are interested in signing Giovinco because Bez liked him when he was the general manager of Toronto.
Wasn't he exiled to Saudi Arabia?
He went to Saudi Arabia. His
contract was canceled, right? Out of mutual agreement. Mm-hmm. Just a couple days ago.
So usually when I see, yeah.
Yep.
Usually when I see stuff like that, I'll text Pat and ask him, do you know anything about this? And then he usually tries to figure stuff out, tries to contact the sources, but we don't know anything about Giovinco. We don't know if it's going to be a thing. I don't think it will be. We'll see.
I feel like Alex has watched Saudi Arabian soccer. What do we know anything about his time there?
So first of all, Sebastian Giovinco is a former Juventus player. So as soon as he leaves my immediate orbit, I forget he is a human being. So no, I have not watched Saudi Arabian soccer.
No,
apparently he hasn't scored much though. So that's not great. MBS
Pro League.
But what I will say is, like, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter say, oh, he can't come to Major League Soccer because of Major League Soccer rules, which is like one of the top five funniest things I've ever heard, because there are no rules ever.
It's like, FIFA rules, not Major League Soccer. If it was Major League Soccer, that would be, obvious.
What are the FIFA rules? If he doesn't have a contract, what's the deal?
I'll have to talk, Alex, and I'm going to bring up a friend of the pod, Patrick Gul'dan.
Yeah, he tweeted. Patrick is always really informative on this kind of stuff. I would definitely look at what he said. What did he say?
Yeah. First of all, we're the Columbus Crew. FIFA doesn't know we exist, let alone that, like, would punish us for signing like a 34-year-old former Italian player. The other thing is that, like, from a Major League Soccer standpoint, I mean, this is the league that decided where Jermaine Jones went by drawing straws, but nobody saw them draw straws. And then he went where Don Garber wanted him to go, just happened to be the straws. So, like, I bet you there were like 100 straws for New England and like one straw for, I don't even remember who the other
team was. It's the 1985 NBA draft lottery for those of us who remember that.
Yeah. If Don Garber wants Sebastian Giovinco to come to Major League Soccer, he will be here next week. If he doesn't, and Don Garber stinks, and so he's probably going to deny us this. He's not going to show up. But either way, it's Don Garber's fault.
Yeah, Bart found it. Yeah. I found it too, what Patrick said. What is it, right, basically, Bart?
It's that so a player may only be registered during one of two annual registers. Okay, here we go. Let's get it. The associations are opposite. Basically, you had, because he wasn't out of the contract before the end of the transfer period, he wasn't able to. So it's not just because he's a free agent. He had to be a free agent during the transfer window. And because he just terminated his contract and the MLS transfer window ended on August, I think, 6th or something, he allegedly would not be eligible to play. Again, I think pretty sus, but I also don't think that 35-year-old Giovinco is the solution to things for the Columbus Crew right now. And especially so far as I can tell, his goal scoring record wasn't too notable in the Saudi Arabian League.
12 goals in 57 games for Al Hilal.
Yeah, and so I don't know if that's a, you know, personality you want to add into this locker room at this moment right now, and I don't know if that's the guy who, you know, went to Saudi Arabia to cash out and then just decided I'm kind of finally tired of being in Saudi Arabia and getting money. I got enough in there. I want to just go back to somewhere nicer. I don't know if that is, while very much justified on his part, not the what we need to add into this special sauce in Columbus.
All right. Well, food for thought, grist for the mill. Anything else? No?
We don't know. We'll have to see in general.
Anything else we need to know about?
Anything
else? Watching the Crew 14 minutes ago just posted highlights of Steven Moriera. Actually, doesn't look half bad. Definitely taller than Harrison.
The fact that they signed somebody in their mid-20s is, I think, crucial. You got to get this team a little bit younger, especially in a position like right back.
This is the really oldest important. Team in the league, which I think we forget a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So I agree, and he's been playing at a high level. So we just accept that he's going to bring something to the table, and I trust Bez. These guys do a good job of scouting these players. That I've become a fan of. So they're trying to address issues as best they can. And again, 4-1. That's going to be the final on Friday. So let's wrap things up. As Ori thanks our sponsor once again.
Oh, yeah. Saucy Brew Works. Why would we not mention them? Because they just happen to be the best bar in Columbus. And they just happen to be the best place in the freaking world. Saucy Brew Works, if your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? 443 West 3rd Avenue. Best food, beer, place to watch things in Columbus and on planet Earth. Go there. And be safe while doing it.
All right, good. I miss you guys. I'm glad we could get together, albeit on this internet forum called Zoom. I feel like we covered a lot of ground. And better days ahead for your Columbus crew, because it can't get any worse. For Bart, for Sam, for Alex, for Ori, my name is Brian. This is my radio station, CD929. Like and subscribe your Massive Report podcast. We do appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.